Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Edition of Sports Time Radio, and hey, look, we're even earlier than yesterday. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call me to the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so if you missed out on yesterday's, swing on over there. It's still hanging out right there at the top of the page for you to check out. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. And don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I'm at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at
Dan the Man.
And, of course, you know, it is Valentine's Day, so we have to wish happy Valentine's Day to all our listeners. And, you know, hopefully if you're married like Dan, your wife doesn't kill you because you messed the day up. But, hey, you know how that goes. So, yeah, other than that, I don't know. What's going on? What's good today that we've heard so far?
Well, we really didn't talk about the Cubs getting their own their deal for their own television network in 2020.
Yeah. Do we care? Are we going to get to see it, I guess, is the question. Is it going to be like the Dodger network where not everybody gets to see it?
Pretty much.
Well, you know. Well, here, while you're on the Cubs, I don't know if you caught this commercial, Dan, but the Brewers are, as the article says, doubling down on pre-sale ticket plans designed to limit the number of Cubs fans attending games at Miller Park in 2019. The pre-sale tickets for all 10 home games against the Cubs will be made available to Wisconsin residents only. I'm guessing that means no Cub fans live in Wisconsin. That means Cub fans on the other side of the Illinois-Wisconsin border will have to wait until tickets are made available to the general public. You know, while this is all fun and good, Dan, I'm guessing that they kind of forgot about, you know, all the, you know, subsidiary ticket places that now sell tickets, and they don't care who they sell them to. So, you know, I guess it's all in good fun, right? But does it really matter?
No, but I mean, it does help. Like, if I were a Brewers fan and lived on that side of the border, I would definitely buy up those Saturday games as many as I could. And, you know, double down again and maybe make all my money back and get some money.
Yeah, you know, welcome to, you know, eBay or wherever you're going to sell these tickets. But yeah, I mean, it would be a, you know, definitely a way to make some money, because that's the one thing for sure is, you know, they're going to sell, you know, especially if the tickets are in short supply, like it appears, you know, Milwaukee is attempting. And, you know, like I said, it's all in good fun. So I don't have any problems with it. I think it's humorous that they're kind of like, you know, yeah, well, this will prevent Cub fans from going to the games. Yeah, I don't think so. But, you know, hey, good luck.
Well, you know, the other problem with it is like a 45, 50,000-seat stadium, and they aren't really known for selling out. So,
but, yeah, like I said, I just got kind of a kick out of it when I saw it, and I was like, oh, okay, here we go, you know, one of the more fun to do.
You know, it's no doubt a good marketing plan.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just laughed. So I get they need things to do. I still think the Brewers should be more concerned about who their second baseman is than keeping Cubs fans out of their stadium, which, as we know, they're not going to do anyway. But, you know, they did sign Brett Lowry to a minor league contract. I don't know how many people remember him, but he was the key piece the A's got back in the Josh Donaldson trade when he went to Toronto. And I actually think he had one good year with Oakland before he fell off the face of the earth, ended up spending some time with the White Sox before. I don't know if they released him or traded him, but, you know, I guess the Brewers are going to give him a second chance here to see if he can recover and compete for that second base job with Corey Spangenberg. But yet, you know, I keep getting emails from Sean Burks, too, telling me how the Brewers are the best team in the NL Central. And I must be an idiot, Dan, because I cannot figure it out.
What did they do again?
Well, they got Jimmy Nelson back. You know, he was hurt, so they're going to get him back. And, well, I mentioned Corey Spangenberg. You know, he will be their starting second baseman. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. They don't have anybody else. And what else did they do? Oh, they got the best move they probably made was getting Yasmani Grandal on the year. So, I mean, they did add a power-hitting catcher. I mean, they added about 25, 30 home runs to their lineup. But to be fair, he is a 240 hitter, and like everybody else in baseball, strikes out a lot. So, yeah. And, you know, as of right now, their number one starter is your guy, Jalees Chacin. So there you go. Then that's the team that's going to run away with the NL Central. You know, and why, Dan? Because they have a fantastic bullpen, and all their starters are only going to have to go one time through the order, and then they're going to turn it over to the bullpen to cover six innings a game, and they're just going to snuff everybody out. And the Brewers are going to win every game via the bullpen. And then come October, when it's time for them to go into playoffs, they're not going to have any bullpen guys because they're all going to pitch so many innings that they couldn't get you out. So there you go. Go get them, Milwaukee. But, yeah, well, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, Dan. I think that I don't even know if I mentioned it to you. But after a couple moves, Pecota came out with new projections, and they now have the Cubs finishing last at 80-82.
Wow.
Well, apparently the only record they changed in the NL Central was the Cubs, and it moved them in a tie for third, because remember they had the Cubs, the Reds, and the Pirates at 81-81. Somehow the Cubs picked up another loss. I guess maybe the Phillies are going to beat them a game because they added Realmuto. But they're not going to be able to beat the Reds or the Pirates an extra game, just the Cubs. So, yeah, the Cubs are now projected to be the last-place team in the NL Central. So I'm guessing whoever runs the Pecota computer just doesn't like the Cubs, because I don't understand where they're getting these projections from. I mean, I do believe Cincinnati will be improved, but did I miss some of the great signings that the Pirates made, or did they make like a huge trade or something that's gonna get them over the top? I don't know, Dan. I seem to be a little lost here on what they did that makes them even a 500 team at this point. You did mention the other day, Ronnie Kuzenhall was one of those under the radar signings. So they did add him. But yeah, you know, I mean, okay, great. They do have Chris Archer. Maybe he bounces back because he was bad for him last year. And, you know, they have a really nice young starting rotation. So I'm guessing that all these guys are going to kick in at the same time and, you know, lead the Pirates to 500. But you got to remember that their best player, Gregory Polanco, or their second best player, depending on how you look at it, he's going to be out for a little while. I mean, you know, like they're saying, doubtful for opening day. I've heard projections that say the Pirates may keep him out till May. You know, so his replacement is, you know, Adam Frazier. They're going to plug into the lineup to replace him, or you know, whoever they plug in there. I mean, he's not going to make up for those numbers. I don't get the excitement of how the Pirates are better than the Cubs, or how the Reds are better than the Cubs, or, you know, the Brewers, or, you know, even the Cardinals. You know, I mean, we talked about the stupidity in St. Louis yesterday with even considering making Carlos Martinez the closer. You know, I'm going to give up a 200-inning starting pitcher for a guy who's going to pitch 60 innings. That's fantastic managing. You know, these idiots have got to get over this bullpen hang-up. It's just ridiculous. So yeah, that's fun. But yeah, I mean, I still, nobody can really tell me. I don't understand how other people don't see the Cubs as the best team in the division. I mean, Milwaukee was a nice surprise last year, but you can't tell me their day-to-day starting lineup is better than what the Cubs are going to run out there. You know what I mean? Like, I got the email from Schomburg Stu today who told me, well, Baez is a one-hit wonder. Kyle Schwarber, Ian Happ, and Albert Almora have already peaked, so they'll be on the downside of their career, and none of them is 26 yet. You know, and I mean, it's difficult to deal with because this isn't a bad team. I mean, the biggest hole is the fact that they just don't have a true leadoff hitter, which I still think Almora could do, but you and I damn well know Madden isn't going to play him enough to get him in a groove as a leadoff guy. So, you know, I can beat that horse as much as I want, and it's never going to finish. So,
no, and the other thing with the bullpen rule in the game now is a trend. And I definitely preferred the trend that Ned Yost started in Kansas City. But, you know, the difference between what he started, which wasn't really anything all that, you know, innovative to begin with. It was just something that really worked. And I think we've seen teams do it throughout the years, but it was pre-sabermetrics. And, well, granted, none of his system worked in the sabermetrics because nobody liked the rules to begin with. You know, the biggest difference between what he did and what they're trying to do now is that his system kind of was proven, and it really worked. The Red Sox.
It seems like, didn't they take his idea and just kind of take it to the extreme?
Oh yeah, way, way to the extreme.
So. You know, and while we were on the Cubs, I do want to mention, I still hate their bullpen. You know, it's already came out now that Brandon Morrow will miss the first month of the season. They added Xavier Cedeno today. You and I talked about him. It was either yesterday or 2 days ago. But he's a specialized lefty. He's that guy who comes in, he gets out one left-handed batter, and then he leaves the game. That's all he's there for. That's simply what his job is. The only time he faces more than one hitter is if it's a blowout. So, yeah, I have zero confidence in the bullpen, and I hope they don't start blowing a lot of games for them. But, you know, they have a veteran starting staff. And normally, you know, this is stuff that prognosticators love. You know, I mean, Lester's been fantastic, even though we had questions about the long contract. You know, Kyle Hendricks has been good. I know his numbers were a little down last year, but, you know, you can't be a Cy Young contender every year. You know, at least not everybody can. You know, even Justin Verlander has had down years. Quintana, I'll admit, has been a bit of a disappointment, but, you know, he's not asked to carry anything. He's a solid starter. Hamels was really good after the Cubs got him last year, and if Darvish can just win frickin' 12 or 15 games, they're in a real good spot. So, I just get baffled more and more on why they don't think this team is going to win, because let's face it, if they don't win, it's strictly managerial here. It's got nothing to do with talent. There's talent on this team. So,
well, you know, that's how you brought up that Hendricks numbers were down, but he did, you know, get a couple, I think, stints on the DL, and not to mention the fact that it's hard to keep numbers up when it's the fourth inning and you've got, you gave up a double with one out and you're pulled from the game.
Yeah, and you're looking over your shoulder wondering who's coming in the game to, you know, to take your spot. So, you know, and again, that, you know, that falls to poor management. You know, is strictly all, you know, strictly all that is, you know, just bad managing. Because, yeah, it's kind of humorous that, you know, Hendricks did make 33 starts and pitch 199 innings. And now what's funny is he was 14-11, but his ERA was 3.44. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, that's a really good, really solid year. You know, the problem is he spoiled everybody. You know, in 2017, he had the 3.03 ERA. In 2016, he had that fantastic year, you know, 16-8 with the 2.13 ERA. So, you know, everybody's expecting that Kyle Hendricks, and, you know, you're not going to get that guy every year. You know, again, you know, everybody has the up and down years, but there's nothing wrong with a 3.44 ERA. I get it. He's not a dominant strikeout guy. You know, he's not that kind of pitcher, but he doesn't give up a ton of runs. And, you know, last I checked, Dan, I know they have all these sabermetric stats, but don't you still win the game by outscoring an opponent? So you would want a pitcher who limited the team you're playing to score, right?
Yes.
Okay, I always get confused by that because, you know, when they start jamming up all these things, it's honestly like they kind of forgot how to win the game. You know, because certain things don't matter anymore, but yet that's how you win the game. You know, like you move that guy to second, from second to third, and he can score on a, you know, a wild pitch, a pass ball, or many other, you know, ways that he can get home. But it's not important to do that anymore because you gave up your at bat and you didn't hit a home run. So, you know, it's just the continuation of stupidity that has, you know, found its way into Major League Baseball. And I did hear a funny thing today. They were talking to Garrett Cole about the opener, and he actually questioned, you know, like he said he would have no interest in coming into a baseball game now because he's not excited to come and do math. So you got to wonder if sooner or later this actually might affect attendance a little bit because, you know, people will get tired of it.
Well, and how many times have you heard any of our local radio head sports guys talk about how they were bad at math when they went into radio? Which I don't think is that funny as a joke. But
I don't listen to those guys, so you'd have to help me out there.
Yeah, well, you used to. Guy, you know, you've heard that a million times.
Yeah.
You know, except for the one guy who went to Northern and thinks he's better than everybody. But that's a whole other topic.
Yes. No. Yeah. There are those guys who are just better than everybody.
Or, I'm sorry, smarter than everybody.
So, but yeah, I just, he made a really interesting point. Well, you know, you do have to wonder if sooner or later fans are going to get frustrated with this or tired with this. I mean, honestly, you know, I don't want to go to a game and see a bunch of guys strike out. You know, that's not exciting to me unless, you know, it's against a dominant pitcher who's having a fantastic game, but, you know, when guys are striking out against pitchers that you and I could probably foul balls off of, that's not really fun for me to watch. So, you know, I always kind of get baffled by what's wrong with putting the ball in play. I still don't understand this.
Yeah, well, you know, that was one of the big issues I had, you know, years ago when they had Javi Baez up when he should have been down. You know, I went to, two games, and he was 0-for-9 with 9 strikeouts.
Yeah.
You know, granted, this was against, you know, at the time, the Dodgers and the Giants, who are a hot team. But even last year, you know, which I know we have slightly different opinions on Ronaldo Lopez for the White Sox, but at the same token, if Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani weren't just swinging for the fences every time, I think it would have been better than a suited-up game. You know,
wait, what are our
you know, but at that game, I don't think there was a ground ball hit once. I think everything was just a flyout.
Yeah, I just want to know what our differences are.
Well,
on Ronaldo Lopez. Oh, that doesn't mean we really, you know, that's not really a difference. I mean, I think he's a good pitcher, too.
Well, I think he's better than you think he is. I think that's what it is.
Okay. But I mean, that's not really the difference. I mean, I could see, like, you know, I thought he stunk, but it was great. Then that's, you know, that's more of a difference.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, just one of those, you know, one of those things. But yeah, I don't know. You know, all this kind of baffles me, and I'm like, yeah, okay, great. You know, here we go. What else we can do, and you know, come up with something else to screw the game up, and you know, sooner or later they'll drive away their fans, and everybody will be wondering what the hell happened.
And there's that, and the fact that, you know, I don't think, you know, they always want to get the game younger, but I don't really think, you know, with all the sabermetrics, it attracts any of the kids. Nor does it make them excited to watch any baseball show.
No, because, you know, I mean, it goes back to what Cole said. I mean, why do they want to do math? Especially when they're not in school.
You know, the other side of it is growing up as a kid, you know, you were probably more of a teenager, maybe a little bit older, but you remember This Week in Baseball.
Of course, I love This Week in Baseball with Mel Allen.
Oh, yeah. You know, what was it all about? It was about the actual highlights of the game, seeing who played well, and, you know, obviously leaving out you always have your bloopers, but, you know, that was showing the game, enjoying the game. It wasn't all about the numbers.
Yeah.
And I think they focus too much on the numbers now.
Yeah, no, well, you know, that seems to be, you know, the whole thing now is, you know, because I know they were, talking before they had an interview with the Vanderbilt, because, you know, their name's going to be on MLB Network over the weekend. He's a former journeyman major league player by the name of Mike Baxter. And, you know, they were asking him what hitting philosophy does he teach? You know, does he preach swing plane? Does he preach exit velocity? And after they got the second thing out there, I turned it off because I was done. So, you know, because it's like, really? You know, I mean, I coached baseball for years and didn't focus on any of that stuff. I just tried to teach the little leaguers to hit the damn ball. So, you know. But, yeah, now everything is, you know, well, you know, he's got to have this launch angle or this swing plane and this exit velocity and, like, none of the, you know, great. So we're going to hit long fly balls that don't accomplish anything, or we're going to strike out when your team needs you to put the ball in play.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, wonderful. Now we're happy.
Well, you know, that even, you know, bring it back to Chicago once again and, oh, you know, how many times did we hear watching a game in April? Oh, well, that one would have been out if it was June. Well, yeah, but they had early trained and told to do one thing. So instead of driving it in to get a guy around from second, you know, to get a fast guy in, you know, Ian Happ, Russell, pretty much anybody, but even Schwarber, to get him around from second to score, we're not doing it. We're going to leave them on second. Yeah,
right.
The big flyout. But in June.
Yeah, you know, and then if the guy behind you hits a loop single, he can't score because he's on second base instead of third. So.
But you know what the problem with baseball is, though, right? It's the shift. That's the real problem.
Yeah.
It's the shift.
Of course. Yeah, because God forbid anyone's ever been taught to hit the other way. And I kind of laugh at these guys, you know, like Ryan McCann was one of these guys who came out and specifically said that he's not going to try to hit the other way. He's just going to pound the ball into the shift. Well, that makes fantastic sense for you. You know, let's ground out the right field because you're a catcher and you're in like your 15th year and you're not beating anything out. Yeah, let's go ahead and bat 180 because I don't want to try to hit the ball the other way. I would rather ground out to the, you know, the third baseman standing at second than trying to get a base hit. So, you know, it's like fantastic. You know, again, just more, you know, more wonderful strategy from, you know, players.
Yeah, well, you know, at 100 miles an hour, these guys can't be expected to, you know, recognize the pitch and hit it the opposite field. At least that's
yeah.
The excuse.
Yeah, but they can get around with 100-mile fastball to pull it, but they can't hit it the other way. So, you know, just that fun stuff. So, yeah, I just don't just don't understand it sometimes. And again, you know, they have coaches. You know, I mean, Chili Davis was a fantastic hitting coach when he was with the Red Sox. He ends up in Chicago, and apparently he can teach anything.
Well, that's because they're millennials. And Joe Mann's got a book on it. So that's going to save them.
Is that the thing? Or, you know, is, you know, Theo telling them that, you know, this guy's got to do this or this guy's got to do that? Or, you know. So, yeah, I just, you know, it's always, you know, again, I, you know, more and more I become baffled with what coaches on a major league staff do, you know, because it just seems like nobody makes adjustments or we can't seem to, you know, to show anybody anything. It's kind of like, wait, why, you know, why can't somebody do this? I don't understand it, but you know, it's like, oh, okay.
Well, it's not what everyone else is doing. So.
Yeah. Well, again, it just kind of confusing that I'm like, okay, well, we have definitely guys who, you know, could handle, you know, teaching, or they're supposed to be able to handle it. So, you know, but now we don't teach. Hey, I'm confused. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, just, you know, I'm getting to the point where I just kind of give up and, you know, I'm going to stop turning on the MLB Network and I'm just going to watch games and that's it. You know, and not, you know, maybe turn the sound down so I don't have to listen to any of the BS. So, but I found this one interesting, Dan, and I would love to kind of know where it came from. And I don't know if you caught this one. I don't know how long it's been out there. But there were talks that there were some NFL owners pushing for Adam Silver, who, of course, is the commissioner of the NBA, to be the new NFL commissioner when good old Rogers' contract expires. I don't know how serious, you know, he would be about taking this job, but, you know, Goodell does make about $30-plus million dollars a year. I don't know what Silver makes. I don't know. You buy this? You like this? I mean, you think he's an upgrade or what? You know, what are they thinking? Let me bring Dan back in and maybe he can answer me. There you go. You're back in now. So
who's an upgrade?
Adam Silver. You're buying Adam Silver as the next NFL commissioner? He's going to give up the NBA to come to the NFL?
I didn't know they could do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they're under contract just like anybody else. So as long as his contract is up, you know, he can pretty much go wherever he wants to.
Yeah, well, I didn't know, like, they crossed over like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, Goodell is a lawyer. I assume Silver is too then.
Yeah.
You know, because,
yeah,
I mean, as commissioner, what do you really do?
You enforce the rules. I think the only reason he would come over is to help with quote-unquote race relations better.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, you know, like, it's an odd thing. I mean, you know, obviously the things that the NFL seems to do poorly, the NBA handles flawlessly. You know, like, you and I talked about it here. The NBA has had a national anthem policy going way back to, I think, the 80s, and nobody ever brought it up. But when it happened in the NFL, it was the biggest deal in the world. You know, obviously discipline in the NBA never really seems to be a big deal. But, man, when there's discipline in the NFL, it changes the world.
No, and it's
so, yeah, you wonder.
The NBA is the players' league of all the leagues.
Yeah. So, yeah, and obviously, you know, Silver has a better relationship with the players than Goodell has. You know, I don't know if, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if it did, I don't think he would have that same kind of relationship in the NFL. Do you?
No.
No.
No, I mean, like you've always told me, you know, you can never meet your idol because you'll find out that you hate him or whatever.
Suck.
But, you know, that's just like when you brought up the Eric Dickerson thing. I mean, you know, this is a guy I grew up as a kid. You don't know anything else about him because he was a great player. And then to find out, you know, now he's coming out that he's a Hall of Famer and screw everybody else who's not a Hall of Famer and he should get an annual salary just because.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he should. Shouldn't they all? All the Hall of Famers should get something, right?
I mean, if that were the case, then I think we'd only have one guy inducted every year.
You know, if that were the case, I think there's a wrestling company in Chicago that owes me a little money, don't you? Yeah, even so. Well, then they owe me some back pay is what I'm looking at here. You know, as long as I get a check. Well, not a check. I would want cash from these people.
Well, no, your payment would let me come in for free.
Yes, there you go. So, but, yeah, it would be interesting to see how, you know, a commissioner would make a change from sports, but I don't see it happening. And you got to remember, you know, in the NBA, the owners actually listen to Adam Silver. In the NFL, the owners want a puppet who's just going to do what they tell them to. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and I think the biggest problem with Goodell is the fact that, you know, when it goes back to the, you know, the domestic violence stuff, you know, it's just, he backtracks too many times. And I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, oh, Ray, whatever your last name was. It always seems like this guy named Ray from Baltimore, right? In trouble. You know, we're going to try to cover it up, so I'm going to give you two games, but, you know, the biggest media outlet out there, TMZ, which is owned by another lawyer, go figure, is going to secure the information that not even the police could get. You know, that's very interesting. I don't know how that's not... But, you know, even in that, I don't know how that's a very much on the verge of illegality. You know, that's why I think the freedom of press is great, but at the same time, I think some provisions hinder it and don't make it as great as it could be, because that should have been out there from the beginning. That should have been, you know, given to the police and then handled accordingly. But then, you know, oh, well, you guys found out. So I guess now I have to suspend Ray Rice for, you know, 8 games. Oh, you know, what about the kicker from New York? Oh yeah, I forgot about him. So we're going to get him 6 games.
Yeah, well, you know, again, you know, it's always a tough spot, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, you're talking about guys who were never charged with crimes. You know, I mean, even this latest one, Kareem Hunt was never charged with anything. You know, it's just these videos pop up. You know, and I mean, obviously, they're doing stupid things. I mean, it's terrible what they did in the videos. But, you know, I mean, you're looking at, you know, I mean, like, just for example, if you did this and they sent a video to your boss, would you be suspended or fired?
I don't know.
You know, I mean, it makes it so different, you know, because, you know, it's not a real-world type situation. I mean, in most companies, you know, they don't know what you do outside of work unless you happen to land in the papers for doing something bad.
Yeah, which is true because not the firm I work with, but a big-time, big-shot attorney from Chicago was in the DUI and killed somebody. And he's lost everything now. He's disbarred, you know, the whole nine. So, but, you know, the one thing I find the most interesting, and, you know, and don't take this the wrong way because I am an animal lover. I have 3 dogs myself. But for all the things that all these other NFLers do, all they technically get is a slap on the wrist. You know, yeah, they lose out on some money and then a suspension. But Mike Vick is the only one who didn't harm a human and went to jail.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, like, the guy in reality who lost the most was Ray Rice, because he's the only one who never got a chance to play again.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else has somehow ended up back in the league. I mean, you know, even Greg Hardy had another year or two after, you know, he was technically found guilty, and then on appeal he was found innocent. So technically he was innocent, but, you know, the way he was found innocent was he paid off the ex-girlfriend. You know, the reports are she made quite a handsome sum of money to recant and not testify against him on appeal. So he was, you know, he was innocent. Now he's an MMA fighter, so he's still an athlete making money. But, you know, Ray Rice never played another NFL game. You know, I mean, hell, Reuben Foster, when the 49ers cut him, the Redskins signed him the same week he was accused of domestic violence. Now, to be fair, they didn't find any evidence he actually committed the last domestic violence, but that would have been his second one, or maybe his third. So, you know, it's not like he had never done it before. You know, yeah, he's got a job. He's a Redskin. You know, Ray Rice never, you know, I think he came back and then they cut him. So, you know, maybe he cashed a couple of checks, but he never got his career back. He's the one who really paid the ultimate price. You know, and again, another guy who was never charged with anything. Or, you know, or what, they charged him with a third-degree misdemeanor, but then I think they dropped it. So,
because we don't have to do our job, we'll just let the NFL take care of it.
Right, you know, and that's what it's like. Okay, well, we'll just drop it, you know, and they do it to, you know, like the NFL and, you know, Major League Baseball too. You know, they had the Aroldis Chapman thing, who again wasn't convicted of anything, but you know they had to suspend him because of the situation. You know, I mean, here locally, I don't think Addison Russell was ever convicted of anything. Now, obviously, if the stories are true, it's horrible what he did to his wife. You know, that's ridiculous, and he deserves punishment. But we have a legal system. I don't understand why it's not used when these things come up. But yeah, who knows? So, but then yeah, and then the other story I wanted to run by you here. I don't know if you caught this one. I'm gonna guess the answer is no here, but do you happen to know who Matt Kuchar is?
No, but I'm sure he didn't have an easy time in grade school and high school.
Well, you know, he's a professional golfer. You know, I'm trying to look here to see how many tournaments he's won, but I know he's won, you know, he's won multiple tournaments. The article I have here says his net worth is about $20 million.
Wow.
Last week, he played in a tournament, and his regular caddy couldn't make it. So he had to hire a temporary caddy. He actually has 9 professional wins. And I believe he ended up winning $120,000 in the tournament last week. And he apparently gave his replacement caddy only $5,000, where in most cases they get 10% to 20%. So he apparently is really taking some heat for this. But he did come out and say, or no, excuse me, he actually won the tournament and made $1.296 million, and the caddy only got $5,000. He did apparently say that he did work this out with the caddy beforehand, but I don't know, Dan, does that solve him of not giving the guy a little something extra for winning?
No, but how come you never informed me about any of this? Because I would definitely become a professional caddy.
Well, here it does say that normally they make in the neighborhood of $1,800 to $2,000 a week on the tour, on the PGA Tour, which still isn't too bad. And then on the LPGA Tour, they make about $1,200 a week. So, yeah, Dan, I had no idea they made this kind of money.
I should have did that with the kid in high school. I didn't know you could.
Yeah.
Make a living. Well,
here's the breakdown. They say what they call, you know, the average percentage. A caddy gets 10% if the golfer wins. He gets 7% if the golfer finishes in the top 10, and then 5% for anything else inside the cut line. So, yeah, you know, normally Kuchar's caddy would have got, what, $1.2 million? He got, what, $120,000? So, yeah.
Wow. Just to hold some tees and pass some clubs.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, carry the clubs around. You do have to know the yardage and stuff and, you know, like which way the wind's blowing, but I'm sure you could learn that. And, yeah, you know, that's about it. You know, make sure the club head is clean and all that other fun stuff. And, you know. So, yeah, there you go, Dan. You could be
in a movie.
Right. You know, you could be making, it just, even on the LPGA, Dan, you could be making $1,200 a week.
Yeah, and there's a couple female golfers I definitely would caddy for.
You know, and I do wonder, you know, how travel works. Of course, all that stuff is tax deductible, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that could work out. So yeah, there. Well, you know, you're still a young guy, Dan. You could do it.
Yeah, but I'd be the most lackluster caddy there is out there.
I would be the slowest, definitely. So.
Yeah, I'd be standing there falling asleep.
Yeah.
You know, my brain isn't wired for golf, unfortunately.
No, you know, I used to really enjoy playing. You know, I used to have a good time. Sadly, I'm so physically broken down now that I don't think I could, you know, I don't even think I could swing the club. I probably couldn't get it over my head without being in pain. But, yeah, not a bad living. I know, you know, occasionally your golfer does yell at you. But, you know, I mean, for that kind of money, I could deal with that.
I mean, I'm sure your dad yelled at you. What difference would it make, right? My dad yelled at me.
My dad yelled at me on the golf course when we played together. So.
Shoot, I mean, I'd let him hit me and then have him pay me off afterwards, too.
But, yeah, I mean, think about it. Just going off those percentages, imagine what, you know, Stevie Williams caddied for Tiger Woods for years. Imagine how much money that guy made.
Ooh. Well, he's probably like a caddy team if they have their own magazine. I'm sure they have their own magazine. Caddies in America.
Probably.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I mean, just kind of – you know, I mean, even though the guy, you know, and I mean, the guy still made a good amount of money. I mean, he made $5,000. The only reason it came up was for the fact that Kuchar won. So, you know, if he wouldn't have won, we probably wouldn't even be talking about this. But, wow.
Let's be honest, $120,000, you just got shorted $115,000.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, you know, yeah, he really kind of got the shaft, but, you know, I you know, $5,000 still isn't bad money.
No.
You know, I mean, he you know, hell, he's even making more than Mr. Fantasy makes in a week, and that's saying something. So, but, yeah, I just thought that was kind of like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah, but that $120,000 would have paid off his golf coaching lessons.
There you go.
Cool.
So,
yeah. Yeah,
but, all right, well, you know, it is about that time, Dan, being that it's Thursday and you're wrapping up your week here. You know, let's admit it, you kind of dropped the ball last week when it came to sports movies. So we're, you know, I think everybody listening is going to make up for it this week. What sports movie did you go with this week?
Well, you know, since it is entertainment, I figured I'd go with a sports and entertainment movie because I couldn't pass it by when I was scrolling through Netflix. And that was Jack Black's famous Nacho Libre.
I got to tell you, I hate this movie.
Really? It's dumb. It's dumb as hell. But it was better than basketball. That's for sure.
Oh, see, I don't think so.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, what can we say about it? It's a guy who, I don't even know what you'd call him. He works for an orphanage. He wants to be like a priest or something.
They list him here as a monastery cook.
Yeah, there you go. And he wants to wrestle. And, you know, he does it all for the kids. To make money to feed them. So, you know, it's a good lighthearted story, and then the nun comes in that he falls in love with and wants to, you know, make babies with her or whatever. You know, aside from the wrestling part, it's pretty funny, you know. He's surprised to make money to lose, but people love him, and, you know, that's the underlining of what everyone doesn't know what wrestling's all about. It's not about winning or losing. It's about putting on the best performance. But I don't know if you skip to the one part. Ramses is the number one luchador, and he has a party, and Jack Black's there, and he's a mariachi band, and he sings this hilarious song and then gets thrown through a table. So that's probably my favorite part of the movie.
There are a couple laughs in it. I just didn't enjoy it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Overall, at the end, you know, you got to have the heartwarming story where he's a down and out guy and he wants to do it all and loses his shot, but and then events change and he gets the win. I would say he gets the girl, but they don't really go that far because she's a nun. So.
Yeah,
it's
a little odd that he's trying to win a nun's affection, but, you know, hey, I guess whatever you got to do, maybe that adds to the humor. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, then the other part where, you know, maybe it's funny, it's ridiculous, but he invites her back to his room to eat toast.
Oh. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's
so.
Yeah.
They do have, like, the tagline here they have for the movie is quite humorous. It's, he's not lean, he's not mean, he's nacho average hero. So, but yeah, you know, it was a big money maker. You know, the estimated budget was $32 million. It made a little over $80 million in the U.S. and then just a little over $99 million worldwide. So, you know,
I can't believe it cost that much to make it.
So yeah, well, maybe, you know, did they shoot in Mexico or something? I don't know where they, you know, where they ended up going with this, but.
If they did, it should have cost $1 million. You know, the funny part about it, worst part about it, when I donned a mask for a little while and red and black, which was nowhere near Metro Libre's colors, but the minute I turned it on, walked down the stairs and everyone looked and all I heard were the Nacho Libres from all the wrestlers in the back.
You know, oddly, looking at the cast, I don't know a lot of the names. Like, the only other one besides Jack Black that I know is Moises Arias. You know, I've seen him as a bit player here and there. He plays Juan Pablo in the movie. But, yeah, you know, like, the rest of them are mostly Hispanic actors that I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know who any of them are. Do they list who Ramsey is? Is he an actual wrestler? I thought he was a real luchador. Like El Mascara.
List his name here. He's actually, he's Cesar Gonzalez in real life, but he's the luchador Silver King. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it looks like they used a couple other, like the two referees have luchador names. Like the one is Tigre Hispano and the other one is Terracino. You know, the guys who played the arena referees, they don't have names, they're just arena referees. So, you know, it looks like they used a couple of those guys. I just don't know, you know the name, know the names here. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't pass it by. I haven't seen that movie in probably 10 years or more. And so I figured, hey, it's on Netflix, let me watch it. I know Big Jack will love it.
Yeah, I didn't see it when I was flipping through the Netflix stuff. You know, I didn't. I ended up watching Jason X, whichever one it was, because, you know, I'm a sucker for those movies. So I actually didn't watch a sports movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that on Netflix or is that somewhere else?
It was. I watched that one and Jason Goes to Hell. So yeah, that's kind of where I was. Of course, you can see what I watch, right? Because it's under your password.
Yeah. Unless you went under the guest one. I will say my favorite Jason movie is Freddy versus Jason.
Yes. I think that's the best one. Like the Jason X one isn't too bad. You know, that's one of the better ones. You know, with him ending up going into the future and stuff because they were cryogenically frozen. You know, that's kind of humorous. And it has one of the better kills in it where he stuffs the girl's face into the liquid nitrogen and then slams her face on the counter. So that's one of the better kills. But You know, I don't know. Are they? Is that, you know, while we're on movies, even though it's not sports, are they bringing him back, or have you heard? I thought they were going to do one, and then it got canceled.
I don't know. I didn't even see anything.
Yeah, I remember. I thought I saw something while I was showing my cat YouTube videos that they were going to relaunch the series, but something one of the other horror movies they put out did so poorly that they canceled the remake. But I guess I wonder with how well Halloween did, if maybe they'll consider bringing it back.
Oh, which one, Jason or Freddy?
Jason.
I don't know, it's acquired taste. And, you know, after all the Jigsaw movies, I think it's hard to, you know, really bring Jason back.
Yeah, but he's Jason. You know, they haven't made one since 2009,
yeah,
so isn't he supposed to come back?
Well, that was kind of supposed to be a reboot that didn't really take off.
Oh, excuse me. You know what I mean? There were so many of them that were supposed to be the last one in the series, and they just kept picking them out. You know. But, yeah, here, oddly, the worldwide, the movies have grossed $464.67 million. So, obviously, they're moneymakers. So, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff, but you know, that was just kind of what I ended up watching. I didn't find anything else I was really interested in, and I think I watched like an Ali Wong comedy special or something too. So
yeah, I've been listening to a lot of comedy at work.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah, I kind of listened to Mr. Chow from Hangover. He had his special on Netflix. I guess it was open today.
Do they do sports comedy? Is there sports comedy? I wonder, you know, if anybody does that. So, can you tell funny sports stories? Is that even possible?
I don't know.
I don't know. Of course, I guess that would kind of be a niche audience, and it probably wouldn't work out for you. So we'll have to, you know, I did see Rob Gronkowski hosted like a comedy special on Showtime, but I don't think they did. So.
While we're going, though, hit up sportsradio.com. It's a blogging for today. Go over there, get over there, and check it out. Link over to the Facebook page and give that a like. But don't forget the Twitter feed, which is at sportsradio. You can hit Dan and I down on Twitter as well if you'd like to do that. But always, big thanks for coming on and listening live. But just remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to anytime you want at tunein.com.